What was the most striking feature of the psukim? You know, when you talk about the end of the second chapter, psukim chav gimel through chav hey, yeah, Zachary.
I didn't really understand like what yamim harabim was.
Right. So remember before we said by hiba yamim harabim ahim, that's where the Ramban came in with his big chiddush and said this is a reference to all the many many years that passed that Moshe was a refugee in the ancient Near East, wandering from place to place. Eitan. Well, when the king of Egypt died, and all of a sudden they start screaming and crying out. And that's definitely one of the big questions here is, Vayamos Melech Mitzrayim, and then we have Vayayan Chuvinei Yisrael Min Avodah, Vayizaku, Vatal Shabbasam Elohim Min Avodah, Vayishma Elohim Es Nakasam, Vayizkor Elohim Es Briso, Es Avram Es Yitzchak V'Es Yaakov, Vayar Elohim Es Bnei Yisrael, Vayeda Elohim. So the Ramban, amongst others, but in this credited to the Ramban, wants to know, you know, why exactly does the death of the Melech Mitzrayim engender this kind of intensive tefillah? Right? I mean, that's clearly the most striking feature of these psukim. We have, you know, like we always have the notion of Arba Lashono Shel Geula, right? Ve'otzeiti, ve'itzalti, ve'galti, and then ve'lakachti. Now we have Dalad Lashono Shel Tefillah. Anocha, Vayizaku, Shav Asam, Naak Asam. So what's this explosion all about? Anybody know what the Ramban says? Why would they be davening really intensively now?
Because now like they sort of have a chance of being freed.
You're close, but you have to refine it a little bit. You have to refine it a little bit. You're absolutely on the right track. Yitzchak? Okay. But Eitan, want to take a stab at it?
I guess like since the king of Mitzrayim died, that would maybe be more freedoms and more room to be able to do things to free themselves and to get out.
Now bring us home. You sort of said the first half, but you have to sort of finish the idea.
So I guess since they might have this more like extended freedom, that now's the chance to ask Hashem to bring him out to help them.
Well, Ari, you said the first half really well, but yeah, Ari?
When the king died, they had like a bigger opportunity to do more things. So they prayed to Hashem more intensively. This is their moment. You gotta
think about it in terms of human nature. So people who are suffering a great deal under a terrible tyrant, right, so what are they thinking in the back of their minds the whole time? We just need to wait for this tyrant to, and then things will get better. Alicia hit the nail on the head. That's exactly what the Ramban says, is that things didn't get better. And then when things didn't get better, the Jewish people felt they had nowhere to turn. They didn't have it within them to sustain another decade or 20 or 30 or half 40, 50 years of suffering under another monarch who was, as the Ramban says, Marshia Min HaRishon. So according to the Ramban, this explosion of tefillah has to do with the fact that the Jewish people literally felt they had nowhere to turn. They had absolutely nowhere to turn. That's like a very, very important idea. Okay? So, and we're going to develop that idea much more tomorrow. So this becomes almost like the paradigmatic tefillah be'es tzara. Okay, that was the first point that I wanted to cover. Okay. Now, there's a little bit of a cryptic pasuk here at the end of the parak. Vayar Elokim es b'nei Yisrael, vayeda Elokim. And God saw the Jewish people, and God knew. Well, what exactly does that mean? So let's take a look at the Ibn Ezra. Vayar Elokim es b'nei Yisrael. It's a very meduyak reading on the part of the Ibn Ezra. Vayar Elokim es b'nei Yisrael. Okay, Gavi, go ahead. Let's start with the Katzar. You know, let's start with the Aruch. It's fine. It's one line.
Vayar Shayu HaMitzrim
So God saw that which was visible even to the human eye. what the Egyptians used to do to them publicly. Vayedo Elokim, all that was done in private. So you see how it's very meduyak in the language. Vayar, God saw the various suffering and the oppression that was done publicly. That God could see. Vayed Elokim, but that which human beings could never know because it was done privately. Vayed Elokim, God knew that which was done by Seser. This is what was referred to in the Haggadah as the Prisha's Derech Eretz, right? That the Egyptians involved themselves in tormenting the Jews in the most intimate areas of their lives, in their marital lives, between husband and wife, right? Because remember, they were concerned from the beginning. Hineyam b'nei Yisrael rav atzumi menu, so we can't allow them to procreate in a normal fashion. And they interfered in a very horrific way in marital conjugal activity. So what the Ibn Ezra is saying in Vayar Elokim es b'nei Yisrael, God saw the suffering of the Jewish people that was able to be identified publicly, the open beatings, the open abuse. Vayed Elokim, and God knew that which human beings could not know because it was not publicly visible. Now let's have a look at Rashi. And this Rashi has to be conceptualized as part of a constellation of three Rashis, two of which we've discussed in the past. Yehuda, take a look at Rashi here. Vayar Elokim es b'nei Yisrael, Vayedo Elokim. Nasan aleihem leiv, v'lo he'elim eino mehem. So, when it says, Vayar Elokim es b'nei Yisrael, means he's no longer turning away from them, what we would call Hester Panim. We'll see the Ramban in just a few moments. Okay, but it wasn't just that God was quote-unquote looking at them, kaviyachol, right? God doesn't have actual eyes, you know, with a cornea and a retina and a pupil, you know, and an optic nerve. God doesn't have that. But what's the critical word in this Rashi? What word in this Rashi jumps out at us in terms of the manner in which God looked at the Jewish people, Naftali Sender? Exactly. What meaning what? Exactly. That God was empathizing with the Jewish people. Now, this is deeply reminiscent, Eitan, of which Rashi? Deeply reminiscent. Gavi? Outstanding. Vahi bayamim ahem, vayigdal Moshe, vayitzei elochav, vayar b'sivlosam. What does it mean, vayar b'sivlosam? Does this mean he was looking around, he was taking a gander, what was going on? But as Rashi said over there, nasan aleihem eina v'libo lios meitzar aleihem. That Moshe didn't just look with his eyes, but he looked with his heart to empathize with them. To empathize. Moshe looked with the eyes and with the heart. You know, there's so many things that you could see in the visual sense, but not process. As the psalmist said, Einayim lahem velo yiru, Oznayim lahem velo yishmu. One can process something in an auditory fashion, but not really internalize it. One can process something in a visual or optical fashion and not really internalize it. That can happen, and it frankly does happen all the time. All the time. So the goal is to look in the way that Hashem looks. Not just with the eyes, but with the heart, with an empathic heart. Who remembers the first Rashi that this connects to? I said you have to see it as part of a triad. So Gavi, you did the work. Ari?
Also maybe with Basparo when she saw...
You know, it's not a bad suggestion, right? But that's in the Pesukim themselves. But Rashi seems to have keyed in on this point. Who remembers? What's the only parsha in the Torah that doesn't start in its own section, but just picks up exactly where the previous part? Vayechi. What does Rashi say there? The first comment, Rashi in Parshas Vayechi. Eitan? Very good. So, Kivan Shemes Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov passes away in Parshas Vayechi. Nistemu Einehem V'liban Shel Yisrael. Lama Parsha Zostuma. Why is this Parsha closed off? Because not only the eyes of the Jewish people were closed, but their hearts were closed as well. That is to say, once their great leader Yaakov died, it was as if they suffered this terrible loss of vision, that they were no longer even able to think in terms of redemption. They could only think in terms of suffering. And Moshe comes and he changes that by opening up his eyes and opening up his heart. And then, of course, Hashem looks not only with the eyes, but Hashem looks with his heart as well. That's a very important idea. And I should just note an example from Tanakh where you really see this. Who remembers probably the most pivotal section in Tanakh where we see that God is pointing this out exactly, that if you look with your eyes, they'll fool you every single time. But if you look with your heart, you try to get to the essence of something, you'll see things much more clearly. And you might even say even a blind man can see. Who remembers which section in Tanakh we would be describing? How about this? I'll give you guys the Sefer and the Perek, and you'll just tell me the incident. Shmuel Aleph Perek Tesayin. Jacob. You're in Shmuel Aleph Perek Tesvav.
Well,
Gavi, go ahead. You're getting very warm. Yehuda, you have it? Yossi?
Was it that David would like have a different way of letting the sheep graze? Is that like...
Gavi, go ahead.
Doesn't like David go to Shmuel and he can immediately like sense that somebody's in that town? Or that he can sense that David's there just out of feeling, not out of seeing?
Yeah, I think we just took a 10-yard holding penalty. Okay, very good. Here we go. This is the scene. So, God says to Shmuel, Ad Masai Atami Tabel El Shaul. Got to get over the fact that Shaul's not the answer. I want you to go to the house of Yishai in Beit Lechem, and you're going to find his successor there. And remember, Yishai has either 7 or 8 sons. David is the youngest. And the minute Shmuel walks in, he sees the eldest son. And the eldest son is like out of central casting for monarchy. He's strapping. He has great physical presence. And Shmuel looks at him, and he's very reminiscent of Shaul. And who remembers what Shaul's most distinctive physical feature was? Mishichmo v'mala gavoa mikol ha'am. Eitan Berenholtz holding down that side of the room with authority. Mishichmo v'mala gavoa mikol ha'am. And this guy, whose name is Eliav, looks like Shaul 2.0. He looks the part. And Shmuel even sort of says to himself, Ach, neged Hashem Mishicho. He says that this was a quick trip, right? And God says to Shmuel, you see nothing. You know nothing. Al tabed el marehu ve'al gvoa komato. Don't look to his outward appearance and to his stature, his height. Excellent, Mr. Friedman. Ki me'astihu. I have no use for him. Ki ha'adam yir'el le'inayim. Because human beings look with their eyes. V'hashem yir'el la'levav. God sees what's in a person's heart. God sees what's in a person's heart. That's the point. That's what it's about. So here we have the same idea in Rashi. Vayar Elokim es b'nei Yisrael vayed Elokim. Not just that God looked in the physical sense, Ezra, but God looked with his heart. And he saw what was in the heart of the Jewish people. And he sensed that true desperation. He sensed that very deep desperation. That was what was essential. And so these three Rashis, Re'iyas ha'enayim, u'Re'iyas ha'lev. It's not enough to look with the eyes, you have to look with the heart. Your eyes will fool you. You'll be taken in by the superficialities. You're not going to see through to the substance. Moshe looked with his heart. God looked to the heart. Mr. Ekman.
Like, I understand, like, how he...
The Ramban here is very taken with the... the multiple formulations. We counted at least four different Lashonos of Tefillah. Vayeanchu v'nei Yisrael min havodah. Vayizaku. Vatal shav asam. El ho alokim min havodah. Vayishma alokim es nakasam. So there's at least four different scribe formulations of prayer. But very intensive prayer at that. The language of Vayizaku, the Rav used to like to say, Vayizaku is much more intense than Zi'aka. How do we know? Who can think of where we have Zi'aka with a Zion? Outstanding. Pasuk? Vayizak. Right, and there you have to deal with, there's an existential threat. I mean, the Jewish people are facing annihilation. Right? So, we'll talk about that more tomorrow. The Rav thought that was Madriak, and the Rambam in Hilchos Tanios. Lizoku Lahariya. Right? A sense of desperation. You're absolutely right. So, it's the multiplicity of formulations, Avi. It's the intensity of those formulations. And then it's also Vayizkor Elokim es Briso, that it caused God to remember the covenant of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So, you know, what the Ramban was essentially wondering about is, why exactly is all of this necessary? Why can't you say the Jewish people cried out to God and he listened and, you know, he set the Geula in motion? Why do you need both quantitatively and qualitatively this level of desperation? So let's take a look at the Ramban here. Okay. So the Ramban says the following. I'm going to take a look. We flip to the Dibur HaMaskil. Vayar Elokim es b'nei Yisrael. Alicia, go ahead. Pasuk Chafei. Right. Okay, so that's the Ibn Ezra, which we quoted before. Virashi Pirish Vayeda Elokim. Right. Okay. So, and he likes Rashi. V'nachonu al derech hapshat. Ki b'tchila, see, originally, there was a state of Hester upon him. God, who had withdrawn himself from the Jewish people, and when God withdraws himself, as the Pasuk says in Sefer Dvarim, U'mitza'u ra'os rabos v'tzaros, and the Ramban quotes it here, Vahaya le'echol, right? Or in the Latin, Hester panim, Deus absconditus. God, who is very much hidden, obscured, obfuscated. So God was at a deep remove from the Jewish people. V'yata, and now, Shama lokim naka sam vira osam lomar. Machovam, and he became, so to speak, aware of their cave, aware of their suffering. And all of the things that they needed. Now here's the critical section of this Ramban. Tanos rabos biglasim. It's like the Torah is trying to overcompensate and to give so many different formulations as to why God now sets in motion the process of Geula. One. Two. Three. Four. Ovav. Five. Why is all of this necessary? I mean, at some point it becomes redundant. Why do we have so many repeated formulations of the idea that God has taken notice, he's become aware of the suffering of the Jewish people? This is a radical statement. The Ramban will repeat it in Parshas Beshalach. Mitzal, you'll tell me what he's saying. Lo hayu ruuyim lihigoyel kamoshim befurash al yidei Yechezkel. What does it mean?
And even though like the set time is up, they weren't like fit or like they didn't deserve to be redeemed.
That's exactly right. Right, this idea of Ger Yezar Achab Eretz Olahem Arba Me'os Shana, that the Jewish people, starting with the birth of Yitzchak, would be in a position of being oppressed. That the Jewish people would be enslaved for 400 years. So that was a minimum, according to the Ramban, but not a maximum. Shouldn't say enslaved, but they would at least be strangers, they would be wanderers, they wouldn't be sovereign. And they were enslaved for 200 plus years. The Ramban thinks something a little bit more than 210, as is conventionally understood. And it could have gone on. They could have been sentenced to another few hundred years. Right, despite the fact that the Kates had arrived, lo hayu ru'uyin lehigoyel, they did not deserve redemption. And thus the Ramban says, and that's exactly why the Torah needed to reiterate many times over, vayara lokim, vayeda lokim, vayizkor lokim es briso, vayishma lokim es nakasam, ki adati es machovav. As Ramban goes on to say in this final line, ki af al pi, go ahead, shenishlam hazman shegazer leim lo yiruyum migal kamash v'vurshi deyichazkel, ella. That's exactly right. What the Torah is trying to say is, the reason that God set the Geula into motion was not because the clock ran out, but was because there was this intensive mobilization on the part of the Jewish people in desperate prayer. De profundis mimamakim, from the utter depths. And that's what moved history. The historical motion was altered by the Jewish people, by their reaction. And that's exactly what the Torah is trying to emphasize. It would not have been, if not for this overwhelming reaction and prayer on the part of the Jewish people. It could not have been. And that was a profound change. So, for the Ramban, from the Ramban's perspective, if you ask what exactly brought about Geulas Mitzrayim, his answer looks very different than the answer that most Rishonim will give. And they'll just say, you know, it was Arba Me'oshana, there was nothing to do. For the Ramban, he says, who's to say it couldn't have been extended? And in Parshas B'Shalach, I should have you know, the Ramban brings an ironclad raya to this. What do you think the best raya to this is? That God had no problem tacking on extra years. Attaboy! The Ramban says, I don't understand how anybody could disagree with me about this. Nobody denies the fact that an additional 39 years were tacked on. When the Jewish people deviated in the desert. So who's to say more time couldn't have been spent in subjugation in Egypt? The Ramban says that in Parshas B'Shalach. And it's absolutely true. And so what changed everything was the prayer of the Jewish people, but here's what I want to emphasize. It wasn't just that they prayed, but they prayed intensely. It wasn't just tzaka, it was zi'aka, and a sense of desperation. Anocha, zi'aka, na'aka, shav'a. These things are ultimately what made all the difference. We're going to pick it up there tomorrow with the Ramban's doctrine of Tefillah Mitoch Tzara. But before we do that, everybody just...